So we have been learning Perek Yitzayin, chapter 17 of Sefer Shoftim. And we met a couple of important characters in this Perek. We met, I guess we could consider the mother of Micha an important character. She plays an important role here. That she seems to entice her son Micha to have a pestle made, or she gets it made, to have this idol made, and then she, first gets him to keep digging his house, and then wants to sing his house. Not long before just having something like that around is going to influence the person, and that's why there's a lab. That's why in the first place it's usher to bring something like that into your house, because it will eventually influence you. You bring the idol into your house, it will influence you. And the same, of course, goes for other things that don't belong in our house. And if we let them into our house, then it's not long before they will begin to make an impression on us. In the second half of the chapter, starting from Pasuk Zayin, so we meet another important person, and he is going to be the Kohen, the priest, for this idol that Micha makes. I want to go back to that and look at those psukim again. So let's go from Pasuk Zayin. Vayi na'ar mi Beis Lechem Yehuda. There was a lad from Beis Lechem in Yehuda, mimishpachas Yehuda, from a Yehuda family, v'hu Levi, and he was a Levi, v'hu Garsham, and he was living there in, Beis Lechem Yehuda. Now, we mentioned last time, right, it's a bit of a strange pasuk. First it says he was from the family of Yehuda, and then it says that he was a Levi. So we discussed that the Gemara goes back and forth, right? So on a simple level, we would have said, and the Mefarshim go in both directions, either that he was a Levi, his mother was a Levi, but his father wasn't, or the opposite, that his father was a Levi, but his mother was from Yehuda. You could go in either direction, and to explain how he was both in the Mishpachas Yehuda and a Levi. Now, of course, if his mother was a Levi, he wouldn't really be a Levi, but that's still how some Mefarshim understand that he was from the tribe of Yehuda, but his mother was a Levi. Now, that is the...
So then why would they say he was a Levi, then?
Because then that was in Micha's mind, he was a Levi. He was from a Levi family, okay, you could be the priest. If you're from a Levi, if your mother's a Levi, that's good enough.
So it's kind of a thing, I really want to be a priest because I have all this.
That's right.
Yeah?
Okay.
It's like that old joke about the Kohen,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. So, right, but we talked about the Gemara, that the Gemara says that he was, in fact, a Levi. Not only was he a Levi, but he was the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. And we're going to see that in the next parak, where it refers to him by name. And his name was... easier to find it here than to... It doesn't say until the next parak. Just flipping my mind right now. I think his name was Yehonasan ben Gershon. Yeah. It was Yehonasan ben Gershon ben Menashe. We understand, the Gemara says that Menashe here really refers to Moshe. And the reason why he's called his coming from Menashe was because, just like Menashe would later do Averos, so Avodah Zarah and the like, the king Menashe, the son of Chizkiah, Hamelech, would be Obed Avodah Zarah, so too Micha also was involved in Avodah Zarah activity.
Right?
Gemara says Mitov she'asa Maisa Menashe, because he did act like Menashe, so that the pasuk may get related to Menashe. And right, of course, Menashe and Moshe are actually very similar in spelling. There's just an ad in nun. So there's not, you know, it's not much of a change to turn it to Menashe.
Yeah, and you also elevated the nun.
Yeah, so is that, do you see that in the pasuk somewhere? I wasn't sure.
Yes, right here. This is commonly the way it's printed, Rabbi.
Oh, so I don't know, or maybe that, oh, it's at the end of,
I'll bet it's
where
there.
Is that? The end of the next chapter. Okay. At the end of Perek Yudbet, yeah, so the Maharsha refers to that, the Nun Teruya. I wasn't sure where it was, and it doesn't appear that way in my Navi.
It does not.
No.
Well, you got to get it
in yeah. So in Pasuk Lamed, chapter, in Pasuk, verse 30 of chapter 18 of Perek Yudbet, so it refers to him by name, the Yehonasan ben Gershom ben Menashe. And in the Navi, in the class, and in the art scroll, and in maybe some other versions, the Nun, in all the versions except for Nightmare?
In mine.
It's in yours. Okay, the Nun is Tsuruya, the Nun is raised to hint to the fact that Nun doesn't really belong there. Rather, it was added there just to show that he was involved in Mice and Menashe, but really you take out that Nun, and it says Ben Moshe, which is... Who he was Yehonasan, Ben Gershom, Ben Moshe.
We're trying to establish his lineage.
Yes. Now, there are a couple of interesting ideas that I'd like to share. I'm going to borrow this for a minute. Related to Moshe, right? You can ask. So, I'm trying to recall what we discussed last time, actually. Now it's slipping my mind. I think we didn't get to why, you know, what Moshe could have done to deserve such a grandson to come from him. And I kind of... Okay, so...
Take it from me, Rabbi. The answer is nothing.
What's that? So, I actually kind of forgot that we didn't get to this, really, so I'm going to just go off the cuff here. So the Niflos Mitaras Hashem Mitzvara, which is a sefer that we've referenced one or two times before, the sefer that, very interesting sefer that basically finds Ramazan finds hints to everything that happens in Nach somewhere in the five books of the Torah and the Pentateuch. It finds different hints to, I shouldn't say everything that happens in Nach, but many things he goes back and he says, oh, and this is hinted to, you know, back in these Sukkim and this Parsha in the Torah. So, regarding this, so he says, you know, he says, how low dover who? It's unbelievable. How could someone like this be a descendant of Moshe? So he suggests, he says, we know all of Hashem's deeds are midah kenege midah, measure for measure. Now, for example, the Moshe, if a great king would say to one of his royal servants that so-and-so rebelled against me and I want to... you know, bring him to justice, and, you know, the job of the servant is to say, okay, and listen, and accept the judgment of the king. He loves the king, he does what the king says, and he should say, yeah, amazing idea, you know, your majesty, it's exactly what I think you should do, I agree with everything that you say, and not argue. Now, if he would say, no, you know, take it easy, it's not a big deal, so, you shouldn't do anything, so that's a degradation to the king. It's a it's against the king's honor. You know, this person dishonored me. I want to bring him to justice, and you're telling me not to do it? That is a desecration of the honor of the king. Now, we find yet that by Moshe Rabbeinu, after the Chayta Egel, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm going to destroy Klal Yisrael. And Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, they worshiped an Egel. You know, they're disrespecting me. They deserve to be punished. But Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu comes up with a tefillah, right? He doesn't say, oh, wonderful idea, amazing idea, absolutely. So he didn't do that. What did he do? So he says he really had two choices of how to deal with this situation. Right, again, the choice is basically, he could have said, no, please don't do it, but that would have been a desecration of Hashem's honor. Or he could have said that, go ahead, and I think it's a great idea, and then Klal Yisrael would be destroyed. So, but Moshe Rabbeinu sort of had a good idea, an amazing compromise, let's say. And he said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't kill them, because it will be a greater dishonor if you destroy Klal Yisrael. Right? Why will you, cast out your anger against them? Lama yomru mitzrayim lemar. Why will you cause the Egyptians to say that he took them out just to kill them? That is going to be a greater dishonor to you than dealing with them, dealing with the Jewish people by destroying them and, you know, taking back your honor. But this, if you do destroy them, that will be an even greater dishonor. So in one...
Wouldn't Hashem have known that? I mean, I know it's a dialogue
question
that goes on between Moshe and Hashem, because Moshe says, no, don't destroy them. I'll work with them. I'll get them on a straight and narrow. But you would think that Hashem at that point would know what he was going to do anyway.
Yeah. It's a hard question. I don't have an answer for it right now.
Yeah, because, Hashem knows. He knows everything.
Right. Yeah, definitely just in Parsha. Yeah, in that Parsha, that's the question that jumps out.
It was a great dialogue with Moshe. And he was a true lawyer, if you will, to argue.
There's a Greek name for this. It's called a theodicy.
Yeah.
And it's never been, right, the only answer for it is in Pirkei Avot. We don't know.
We don't know. Or in the Gemara when they say Teku.
Right.
You know.
So says in the Tzvos Mitarach Hashem Yisbarach, that here you have, on the one hand, there is some level of Chilul Hashem still going on, because still he's saving the nation that desecrated Hashem's name is being saved. On the other hand, there's a great honor that's coming to Hashem as a result by not destroying them. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is medactic with tzaddikim, he's careful with tzaddikim, kifut asaro, like a hare, very, very, very careful with everything. So even if Moshe was, of good intention and he wanted to save Klal Yisrael and save Hashem's honor all at the same time, but still, he caused ultimately that these Ovdei Avodah Zarah were left alive. The Jewish people, those who served the Egel, were left alive. So he says, therefore, he had a punishment and a reward.
Didn't he in the end, there was a punishment for those who were directly involved, right? They were killed.
In the Egel?
Yeah.
I think there were a bunch that were killed.
Yeah, that
but,
were killed. And the lady did it, or God did it? God did it with a, what do you call it?
I think there was
right?
a bit of both. Being killed some, I think there was a plague also.
There was both in there.
But there were many more people, I think, involved that I don't remember. I think there were different levels of serving the Egel, each one dying in a different way. I think there were three different levels, and but the whole nation wasn't destroyed.
No.
Right. I suppose there were different levels of involvement, and some, you know, were
whoever,
indirectly
whoever
involved.
Whoever did whatever
act it was or
to create
it was.
The whole scene. Yeah.
So he says that as a mida keneged mida for allowing the Ovdei Avodah Zarah to survive, so Moshe was telling us that he had a descendant who became an Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and not only that, but caused, as we're going to see, you know, tremendous, you know, others to get involved in Avodah Zarah, in serving this pest of this idol. On the other hand, he saved the Jewish people, and as a reward, Moshe Rabbeinu married many descendants, which is actually how he really began this discussion, was about that Moshe had many descendants. So that was the Midah Kenegi Midah, and that's how Moshe could have such a descendant come from him. It was a punishment for his standing up to Hashem, saving Klal Yisrael, saving them from the, despite that they had served Avodah Zarah and had desecrated Hashem's name, as a punishment he had a descendant to serve Avodah Zarah and brought others to Avodah Zarah. Now, very interesting, put this together with a Meshech Chachma, brought down in here. Meshech Chachma, also in Parshas Kisisa, discussing the ego. So the Meshech Chachma says that the Gemara says in Brachos, Vayechal Moshe Pnei Hashem, right? The pasuk in Kisisa, you read it every time, it's every fast day, and it's about Moshe's tefillah after the ego, and Moshe davened before Hashem, and the Gemara says, Tanya Rabbi Yezer Hagadol Omer, Milamit Shaman Moshe Betzilu Pnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Atchach Zoso Achivo. Moshe stood in prayer before HaKadosh Baruch Hu until Achilo took him over. Vayichal sounds like the word Achilo. And the Gemara says, my Achilo, what's this Achilo that we're talking about? Amar Rabbi Elazar, Eish Shel Atzamos, a fire of the bones. My Eish Shel Atzamos, what's this fire of the bones? Amar Abayi Asta Digarmi. I think it means pretty much the same thing, a fire of the body, of the bones of the body.
He had a fever and whatever.
That's what it sounds like, something like that. You know, he davened so intensely that he just this sickness took him over. I don't know. So the Meshech Chachma says that what it means is that Moshe davened for the Egel so much because he realized that from his bones would come another pagam like this, another Avodah Zarah in this fashion. As we know, the Gemara says, he says that there are three shutzim, three partners in the creation of a person. The father provides certain parts, and the mother provides certain parts, and Hashem provides the neshama. And one of the things that the father provides is the bone. And Moshe sensed that from him, from his bones, would come another destructive Avodah Zarah, just like the ego, just like the golden calf. And he says, therefore, that's where Moshe, that was his trump card, so to say, in in arguing against Hashem and convincing Hashem, because Hashem said, you know, leave me, v'achaleim, I'm going to destroy them. And I'll make you and your descendants into a great nation. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, hold on a second, you know, my descendants aren't going to look that much better. So
you already had a premonition, if you will.
Right.
And he was going to
Ruach HaKodesh, he knew that he would have such a descendant, and he used that to his advantage in saving Klal Yisrael. He said, you know, he davened, so, you know, it's not so looking out so clearly exactly, but he davened until he had this fire in his bones. He understood that from his bones would come from him would come the bones of such a descendant, and he used that in his tefillah for saying, you know, your plan to destroy Klal Yisrael and have me replace them isn't necessarily a good plan, because look, I'm going to have a descendant
that's Moshe's understanding, though, from his own inner feeling, which pushed his as we go back to the whole thing. Hashem knows all.
Yeah, so it's the
he
same
knows
question.
What's going to happen.
It's the same question.
So it's like, maybe just to give you a feel for what Moshe was all about.
It's the same
person.
Question, right? The same question. What exactly does it mean that Moshe convinced Hashem to change his mind? I don't have a good answer to that question.
It's great. It's a great reading to see that.
But, I mean, it comes back to, you know, I think it relates to the question about tefillah in general. You know, why does tefillah work? You know, doesn't Hashem, you know, Hashem always knows he has a plan and knows what's best, and what exactly, you know, what's tefillah for? And so the answer is, the most simple answer is because it changes us, it changes our situation, it makes us holier and more meritorious, and it's a game changer. And
submissive to Hashem.
Submissive to Hashem. So,
yeah. It makes us feel better, if you will.
But it's not just about making us feel good, you know.
Well,
it definitely has that advantage, that tefillah is a great way to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's absolutely true.
It gives us,
but tefillah also works.
Yeah.
Tefillah is not just an internal, you know, good feeling, you know, feel a connection, but... right, that's also a very important part of it, absolutely. So, the Meshachachm actually in another place explains that this was also the reason why after the Egel, where Aaron, you know, had involvement in the Egel, potentially Moshe could have replaced Aaron as the Kohen Gadol, and the Mishnah Chachma says the reason that he didn't was for this reason. He bases this on an Ibn Ezra. There's a very, very vague Ibn Ezra in I'm not sure where it is. I think it's in Korah, maybe. So, but the Ibn Ezra asks, why? He doesn't say. He says, "V'yesh kan she'ela u'tshuvas v'parshas Vayela." He says, "There's a question here, and the answer is in Vayela." So, but he doesn't really say what he's talking about. So the Mefarshim, actually, I think Rabbi Grossman once told me that there are over 100 super commentaries on the commentary of Ibn Ezra. That has the most super commentaries of any parish out there, even more than Rashi. But so one of these commentaries, I think they quote here, Rabbi Shmuel Motot. So he explains that the Ibn Ezra's question was, how come after the Egel, where it says that you know, Aaron is faulted for it, how come he didn't lose his kahuna gedola and it wasn't handed over to Moshe, who wasn't involved? So, right, he says if the Bechorim lost their place because of the Chet HaEgel. So all the more so Aaron, who made the Egel, no, accidentally. Micha also was involved, as we mentioned last time. But Aaron was involved in the formation of the Egel. So he should also have lost his kahuna. So,
but he didn't.
He didn't.
Hashem forgave him.
That's true, but why? So, I mean, the answer that he's giving here is because there was no one else to give it to, sort of. Because his answer is just going to explain why he didn't give it to Moshe. It doesn't explain why Aaron didn't lose it.
Aaron had his sons already, though, right?
Yes.
And they were all... But at that point, did he lose the two? No, that was later. Where the two sons...
No, there wasn't... this was... The Egel occurred
before the all of that, right?
Yes.
So he had four sons, right? One of
which was... Yes,
four
he
sons.
Did.
So, given that he was wrong in what he did, would it have...
I guess that still would have been within the family. So the
right,
way
so
the,
that would have been
question,
it, yeah.
The answer this question, the way they're understanding
yeah,
it,
yeah,
it would have still...
They would
pick
up his character
right.
traits then.
Or, yeah, or it would still have been a reward for him, even if his family was. And if we're going to take it away, we're going to take it away.
But Pinchas later on is given the kahuna then, right? He's the Kohen Gadol, right? When they go into Israel, Pinchas.
Yeah.
He's the Kohen Gadol at that point, right?
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
He was an important figure, I know
yes.
that.
Was he a Kohen Gadol?
Did he become Kohen Gadol?
He was definitely around. Throughout
yeah, going in with Yehoshua.
Nah,
yeah.
Yeah?
Did he become Kohen Gadol? I think so.
Okay. Could be.
So, but he was a nephew.
He was a grandson.
A grandson, I'm sorry. So he would have...
Yeah, no, the kahuna ends up staying with Aaron, that we know, right?
Right, I mean, in Aaron's family...
So, whether Pinchas was the Kohen Gadol, he wasn't, but, the kahuna is still in the family.
So,
and the question is, why?
Okay.
In fact, there's a Rashi in Parshas Shmos. Hashem gets angry at Moshe. They harap Hashem to Moshe. Vayomer halo, Aaron achicha halevi. Aaron, your brother, the Levi. Rashi there says, Shaya asid rios Levi v'lo kohen. Hashem says to Moshe, Aaron was going to be a Levi. You were going to be the Kohen Gadol. But after the year came, now it's not going to be so. Elahu Kohen, the Atta Levi, who's going to be the Kohen, and you're going to be
the
Levi. But so originally he was supposed to go to Moshe, and then he did something, Aaron got it. The question is, after Aaron was involved in the Egel, why didn't he bounce back to Moshe? And Ibn Ezra, again, he just said, V'yeshkan Seila, he didn't say what the question was. And he said, and the answer is in Parshas Vayelech. And he didn't say what the answer was. So they suggest, the Meshech Chochma suggests, that it says in Parshas Vayelech, Ki Adati Es Yitro, because I know his Yitro, I know his inclination. And it says, Ufana Vizana, he's going to turn and he's going to be involved in forbidding activities. And the Meshech Chochma says that Kadosh Baruch Hu in this pasuk was telling Moshe Rabbeinu and all of Israel that there will be a day that Israel, Bnei Israel, will be involved in Avodah Zarah, and that it's going to be a descendant of Moshe that will be responsible for it. And because of that, therefore Moshe would not get the kahuna. And that's a promise, a prediction from Hashem that Moshe's descendants, that the Jewish people, led by one of Moshe's descendants, would be led astray. And that, says the Meshech Chochma, Tshuvasa v'Parshas Vayelech, that's the answer to the question of why Moshe Rabbeinu did not merit to have the kahuna taken return to him.
Because he acted as the Kohen for a short time until
at the
Aaron was installed as
yes.
the Kohen Gadol. So, but could it be that Hashem recognized in the personality of Moshe that, remember, when Moshe was arguing with Hashem, saying, you know, I'm not the guy.
Uh-huh.
Remember? And then later on, when Aaron comes on the scene, Aaron was elevated by Hashem to be his spokesperson
mm-hmm.
against Paro.
Because
mm-hmm. Moshe said, I can't, I'm not able to speak well.
Right.
So being the type of personality he was, Aaron, plus the fact that he could
I don't know if that was a necessary requirement to be the Kohen Gadol. We know Moshe Rabbeinu was a great leader, despite, you know, whether he spoke well or not. I think also he regained his ability to speak well later. So yeah. So yeah. All right. So let's get back to the Navi. So Pasuk Ches, Vayelecha Ish Me Ha'ir, and the man went from the city of Beit Lechem Yehuda, from the city of Beit Lechem, Vagor Basher Yimsa, to live wherever he would find a place to live. Vayelo Har Ephraim, he came to Har Ephraim, Ad Beit Micha Laso Sarko, until the house of Micha, to on his way. Vayomer Lo Micha, and Micha said to him, Me'ayin Tova, where did you come from? Vayomer Elav, and he said to him, Levi Anochi. We're in Pasuk Ches, I am a Levi, mi Beit Lechem Yehuda, from Beit Lechem, v'anochi holeich lagur basher emtza, and I am going to live wherever I find a place to I find Parnassa. Vayomer lo Micha, and Micha said to him, Shva Yimadi, stay with me, Vayeli la'avu l'choein, and be an av, a teacher, and a kohen, Vanochi eten l'cha aseres kesef l'yamim, and I will give you 10 silver per day, Vayerech begadim, and clothes, umith yasecha, and food, Vayelech ha'levi, and the Levi went. So I believe last time we explained this based on the simple understanding, Rashi. Vayelcha Levi, Rashi is Achar Atzasa. He listened to Micha's Eitza. He accepted the offer. The Malbim. What? Right. So the Malbim.
There's an offer he can't refuse.
The Malbim learns that no. Like it says, and he went. He went on his way. He said no. He wasn't interested. You want me to be your priest for Avodah Zarah? No way. You know, I'm not getting involved in that. Rashi. It says, and he went after his advice. That's how it says. Rashi is Achar Atzasa. He went after his advice. And I think that's how all the Mepharshim understand. To the Sadr also, he went after the word of Micha, but the Malbim says, no, he left. He said no. But then what happens in Pasuk Yud-Aleph? Vayoel ha-Levi va-Sheves es-Lish. And the Levi agreed to stay with the man. Vayi anar lo ka'acham ibanav, and the lad was like one of his sons. He agreed to stay, you know, he needed a place to stay. So he agreed to stick around. Wasn't agreeing to be the Kohen yet. He just was agreeing, I'm here, I need a place to sleep, I'll stay the night. And they treated him well. He was like one of the children. They gave him good food. They gave him a warm bed. He was comfortable. And what happened? Vayimale Micha es yad ha-Levi, vayi lo hanar l'choein. And Micha filled his hand, he provided him with his needs, he appointed him, and he was a Kohen, vayihi b'veis Micha, and he was in the house of Micha, that by sticking around, He was influenced, and again, that's the Malbim thing.
He went
means like at first he refused to accept the offer. Maybe he set out to go, and then he agreed. By Yoel is like, and he agreed. You know, in the end, he acquiesced. To stay. You know, okay. You know, they said no, at least stay the night. You know how it looks like. So we're going to see. I don't know if we'll get to today that Micha is a great quality that he does have is he is recognized as a great Machnas Orphan, as a someone who has a lot of guests. And the Gemara is going to note that.
On the level of Abraham.
I don't know if I would go that far, but he was definitely he had an open home. And so you could imagine, the boy is ready to, he says, no, I'm not interested. Okay, at least, you don't have to do it, fine, but stay the night, we'll take care of you. And you can imagine also, a young man, comfortable, easily influenced, and he eventually agrees to be the Kohen. Vayomer Micha, and Micha said, Ataya dati. Now I know, ki yeti v'ashem li, ki haya li ha'levi v'chowen. Now I know that Hashem has done good for me, because he's provided me with a levi to be my priest. Okay. I think he took him at his word. Now he may be like Mitzvah Kisumo. He was when he said it, he didn't know that Micha was in the was shopping around for a lady, he was hiring. So he just said that's how he introduced himself. It wasn't there was nothing.
Don't sign outside saying Levy wants it.
Right.
He didn't answer saying Levy wants.
Right.
So, was this something that he had planned to try to get to somebody like that, Mika?
Well, it says at first that he appointed one of his sons.
Okay.
But
he was not from
when
that
a real
tribe,
Levy
right?
came along, that
he
was
not from the tribe.
No.
Mika was not from the tribe.
No.
So you can't. It's like that joke again, like you said about the coin. You can't be something you're not. So.
Yeah. Okay. Moving right into Parak Yudches, Pasuk Aleph by Yomim Ahim. In those days, Ein Melech b'Yisrael. There was no king in Israel. Uba Yomim Ahim. And in those days, Shevet Hadani Mevakish Lo Nachal Al Hashavas. The Shevet Dan was seeking a inheritance in which to settle, because it hadn't fallen to them yet in among Israel place of inheritance. Now we mentioned previously that this story of Pesach Micha does not happen at the end of Sefer Shoftim, even though that's where it appears, but in fact happens at the beginning, shortly after Bnei Yisrael arrives in Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, as it was known then, and Rashi says that they hadn't yet conquered their entire inheritance, their entire territory.
They were all up here in the north, it says.
Uh-huh.
On the map.
Interesting. Okay, so
this was Canaan here, right? This was, were they one of the tribes that said we wanted to settle on this side?
I don't think so. Yeah, I'm not sure why. That should be God.
The Jordan River's right here.
Yeah, that
right?
should be God. It's not Don. Right? Reuven, God, and Hunter.
Oh, Reuven and God.
Oh, God's there.
Menashe took on both sides.
Right.
Don was in the north.
Okay, so I don't know. I'm not sure what they're doing on that side of...
Maybe he was up here. The Jordan River's here.
Well, ceremony is here, so maybe, I don't know. I don't really understand the picture. But.
Okay, but the Jordan, this is the Jordan River, right?
That's
going
like.
Into the Kinneret and then going back out again.
So Rashi says, you know, they haven't yet conquered the entire territory. The people of Dan were still somewhat unsettled and were looking for land, I guess. The Malbim here, the Malbim comment that right, so I guess we'll have to see what happens exactly. So the Malbim said, points out that, right, again, as in the previous parak where it mentioned Ein Melech B'Yisrael, there was no ruler in Israel. That's how such such a thing could be created and not stop. So too here. Actually says the same idea that it's trying to tell you that there wasn't a ruler to enforce the proper conduct, and that's how they could all end up serving Avodah Zarah.
The Israelites have lost their way, really, through all of this. That Israel was partially settled, but not completely settled, after Jehoshaphat passes on. So this is that period of time where there's a lot of unsettled issues.
Yeah, so actually the Malbim gives a little bit of the background here. And the Malbim says that the Nachal of Dan, the portion of Dan, had two limitations, two chesronos. One was that it was sort of outside of the borders of established Israel, because it was the last one that was to be conquered, and like I guess we saw, it's like all the way up, it's sort of, you know, outside the of everyone else. There's going to be a border shevet, and it wasn't yet completely conquered, and as a result, they had difficulty in taking it over, and the Canaanim actually took back a portion of it. And so
Yerushalayim wasn't settled yet, right?
Yeah,
still in dispute, right? Because I know they didn't conquer it under Yehoshua. He got to the walls of the city, but never really took it over, I guess.
I don't recall when Yerushalayim.
Under David.
Only under David.
They conquered it from the Yebusim.
Okay.
So that was quite a while later then that it became part of Eretz Yisrael. Okay.
So
a lot of things are still unsettled, you know.
Yeah, so basically Dan didn't really have too much land. So that's what it means. They didn't have a portion because it was sort of what they had was outside in a way. It was all the way up on the border, and they also didn't have enough as much land as they needed. And Dan sent from their families five men, Nikitosam, from their leaders, Anoshim b'nei Chayil, strong men, Mitzara me'eshto'o, from these two cities, L'ravyel es'aretz l'chokra, to spy out the land and to investigate it. Vayomer aleihem, and they said to them, L'chu chikru es'aretz, go and investigate the land. Vayavo har Ephraim ad beis Micha, and they came to har Ephraim, to the house of Micha, or until the house of Micha, by Alinu Sham, and they stayed there. They stayed nearby. Are you getting ready for a question?
What?
I thought you were getting ready for a question. No. So, so the Malbim points out that here we have this familiar term Miragel, like Mirag, we're familiar with the term Miraglim, the spies, and he says there are two types of spies. There are what we call Torim and Miraglim. Torim are the ones who go at first to just see if the land is good in the first place. Is it worth, you know, is it worth conquering? Is it worthwhile to take it over? And then there are Miraglim. The Miraglim, once decided, you know, we like this place, we want to take it over. So then you send in the Miraglim, and they are the ones who figure out, you know, how to conquer it. And they're basically, the Torim are looking for what's good about the land, and the Miraglim are looking for what's bad, in other words, where the holes are, where the you could take advantage of them. And he says that these people actually were, they sent both. He says normally, he says, first of all, you, when you send Torim, when you send people to decide if it's worthwhile to conquer, so you have to send, I'll tell you a different spot, and you have to send representatives from each Shevet. Because what might be good for one people isn't necessarily good for another people. And so you have to have representatives, many representatives, you know, that can represent all the people in order to determine if it's a good place. And so that's why he says they sent five people from each family. There were five main families in Dan, and they sent one from each family, and that way each family would be represented, and they also they sent their the mikitzosam from the mikitzosam means like the sides, but here it means like the leaders and the kitzinim. Those are the leaders, because the leaders knew what was good for the people, what the people wanted, and that. So they sent people both to investigate whether the land was good, but also they also sent, in order to determine how to conquer it at the same time, they were also the Ragel, they were also there to figure out how to conquer it, and that's why they had to send Anshei Chayil, they had to be strong, because you're going into dangerous places to find the weak point, and it's dangerous, and you get chased, and you get hunted. And so they had to be strong, they had to be knowledgeable in the ways of battle, in the ways of war. Right? If you're just going as Torim, you're just going to see if it's a good land, so yeah, you could go as Torim, as tourists. And you know, you go as merchants, you don't have to hide yourself in any way. But if you're going as Miraglim, you're trying to find the weak points militarily, so you have to go into different dangerous places, etc. So then you need to go secretly, you need strong people, and he says that here they were, I guess, supposed to be doing both. They chose out both. They chose out different families, so that everyone was represented. They chose out the leaders who knew the needs of the people, but they were also strong people who could do a proper job of investigating, you know, where the weak points are, and still be able to run away if necessary.
They had two missions. The five men.
They had two missions. Yes, exactly. All right, and I think we're going to save it for next time, what they...